Welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Since the city of Detroit emerged from bankruptcy, one of the narratives we've often heard from the mayor and police chief is police response times are going down. But investigative journalists Charlie LaDuff and Steve Neveling dug into nearly 1 million official police dispatch records over the past 2 years and found a different story, which is out now in Motor City Muckraker and Deadline Detroit. Charlie LaDuff is with us now. And Charlie, I'm going right to a sentence that jumped out at me in your story, and I'm going to quote you. Truth is, response times, the most basic measure of police service, are abysmal. Now, to understand, period. I mean, right out there. So to understand the response times, first of all, let's just take care of terminology. What's a priority one call and what is a priority two call?
Okay, loosely, okay. Priority one is violent crime, possibly deadly, injurious crime in progress with a perpetrator who is likely to be caught. So somebody's shooting somebody, somebody's beating somebody, somebody's got a gun in somebody's face. Priority two would be somebody just got shot or somebody just got robbed, right? Mm-hmm. But the high likelihood that the perpetrator could be caught, this has gone on within 15 minutes, shots were just fired, or there's a serious injury. And if you think about that, they can be interchangeable, and it's really up to the 911 operator to determine that.
So with that terminology in mind, what do the numbers tell us? I mean, police say, what do they say is average response time for priority one calls?
Priority one calls, they say 12 and a half minutes.
All right. How does that square with what you found?
Well, when we run all the numbers, 800,000 911 calls over 2 years and take what they call priority ones, it's 14 and a half. So somebody's being shot, somebody's being murdered, somebody's being raped, somebody's being robbed, 14 and a half minutes.
And you found for priority two calls, police are saying they take about 23 minutes, but what did you find?
54 and a half minutes.
Okay.
54 and a half minutes. See, what they do creative math. We'd like to make numbers dance in Detroit. Don't believe them. Let us do the work for you. You might not like numbers, but you need them to know where we're going to go. They like to add in officer-initiated stops. Now, I don't want to get into the nomenclature with them, whether it's traffic stops or a cop sees something on the side of the road. They're factoring that in. When we pull the zeros out, because that's a zero response time, you get 54 and a half minutes. When you put one and two together, you get nearly 40 minutes. And when you talk about shots in progress, 18 minutes. 18 minutes.
So this is where we're seeing the discrepancy from what the city's reporting and when you crunched all these numbers, what your analysis found.
That's right.
Now, you were not able to talk with either Mayor Mike Duggan nor Detroit Police Chief James Craig. Did the city or the DPD respond at all to your reporting since these stories hit? Did they push back in any way?
No, and I expect them to, or I expect them not to, or, you know, I mean, we got other things going on. We got restaurants opening downtown and crepe shops, and that's all good. That's really good. That's a normal city, and we want that. But we will never be a normal city when it's shuck and jive and cockamamie statistics. When people are dying waiting for a police officer, you can't have a normal city. You might have a normal downtown. But then again, that begs the question, is it the rank and file officer's fault? And covering this town for 10 years, I submit to you, Cynthia, that they're overworked, underpaid, undermanned. There's 150 job openings that nobody wants. We need more of the public's money, which is why we went into bankruptcy in the first place, was for quality of life and public safety. That was what it was predicated on. And when we don't get that, when you can't entice good people to be police officers, what does it say about the long-term viability? What does it say about us as a region? Because we're all paying towards the city in one way or another.
Now, you did talk with officers. You weren't able to talk with the mayor or with the police chief. But so tell us a little more about what you heard, about what it's like for them on the ground when they show up for their shift. What is it like?
Well, let me go like this. First of all, about a third of the Detroit police force has 5 years or less on the job. Hmm. A third. Now, you'll have a 19-year-old and a 21-year-old assigned to the same cars often. Who's teaching them to be police? Not only that, because they're so undermanned, they'll do two shifts. People are worn out. Look, a lot of the young guys are scared. A lot of the older guys just have had it, and they're leaving.
So we have, as you point out in your story, we see lack of officers. You also write about how police don't feel safe sitting in the street in their cars writing reports while they're parked on the street. So they go back to the precinct. And then the intake process after an arrest is about 2 hours. So
2 hours.
So give us an example that really hit you of how residents are being affected by these slow 911 response times.
Well, I'm gonna change this a little bit. Okay. So tomorrow there will be a story about a call comes in November, 911, hysterical woman, man bleeding. We need police, fire, and EMS. We're going to go to a corner. That's where we think the call is. They tell fire and EMS to stage, which means park about 2 blocks away and wait for police first. It's a dangerous situation. Fire and ambulance stage about 2 blocks away, but unwittingly, they drive into where the real scene is. It really wasn't at that corner. It's about 2 blocks away. It's an active homicide scene. There's people lurking around. The captain of the rig is calling in saying, we got a person of interest. Where's the cop? Where's the cops? Because they only have 3 cars working that night in this precinct. In pre-bankruptcy, it was 5 and 6, and we were complaining that wasn't enough. They waited, since the initial call came in, the better part of 30 minutes. Maybe 40. It all depends on how you want to look at it. And when we went through all these records and we listened to the dispatch tapes and we pulled the 911 codings and the police reports, it didn't jibe at all with what the chief of police was saying. And he told the public, he stood there and said it took him 6 minutes. So there's a man with his brains in his lap. There's a hysterical woman with blood all over her. There are potential suspects wandering in the shadows. There's a rig of full of firefighters who are hiding behind the rear end of it where the hoses are because they're afraid they're going to be shot. And you listen to these dispatches, and it's like, anybody? Looking for a unit, available unit. No available units. When the president of the firefighters union came public with this, and he released some of these documents, which did have a witness's name in them, instead of looking at it head-on and stop BS in about the 6 minutes, the chief said he was seeking charges of obstruction of justice. Now, these are two very prominent public safety officials talking about obstruction of justice. Of course, the county prosecutor kicked that back. She didn't want to get involved with it. And it doesn't go, Cynthia, to the fact. This is a fact that the people aren't safe. There's too much crime. And when you look at the cockamamie numbers they put out every year, they keep changing. So they'll give you a number of victims from last year. And then this year, that number from last year will change. It'll be higher. So this year's tally is lower. And we've been fed 15% reductions in crime. And when you actually look at the numbers that the police give the state and the state gives the FBI, the number of victims of violent crime has gone up every year.
Now, homicide in Detroit has gone down, right?
Yes, it's gone down across the country, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing because when I first got here 10 years ago, I was counting the bodies because they said, homicide had fallen by, a third. I was like, that's impossible. Where's the parade? Where's the clown carts and the lemonade tanks? And then I found out, they were just reclassifying murders as justifiable homicides. So we keep track of the bodies now. But here's the thing. Homicide is down across the country, and that's a good thing. That probably has to do with a good economy, ubiquitous cameras where people don't want to do the deed, better medical care at the emergency room. But in Detroit, we have something called justifiable homicides. The FBI allows you to classify. You basically kill somebody to protect yourself or somebody else. It's called justifiable, and the FBI will let you back out of your tally, okay? But Detroit does it like no other. Of the 261 homicides last year, we also had 18 justifiable homicides. That's 4 times as many as all of Luxembourg had in murders last year. That's more than a whole Western country. It's a barometer of how unsafe things are or people's lack of confidence that the police will get there in a timely manner where they take matters into their own hands. Baltimore had two, and Baltimore actually added 13 homicides from people that suffered injuries from, you know, prior shootings years past and finally died, and they added those to their count. So when you do the math, we're real close to Baltimore, and Baltimore had Freddie Gray, and the police in Baltimore just basically stopped policing. I want to know what our problem is.
But I, as you point out in your story, you know, when Detroit entered its municipal bankruptcy in 2013, things were supposed to get better. And so what is your message to people about who are going to read your stories about that?
That numbers represent people, okay? And crime numbers represent victims of crime. And if you want to play with the numbers, you're playing with people's lives. And if you're going to engage in this to create a narrative, and I submit to you, Cynthia, it's a false narrative. It's not moving in the direction we want. Simply monkeying with the numbers doesn't make children safer. It doesn't make a concert goer safer. I'm not saying the sky's falling. I'm saying let's bring truth and clarity. And maybe once we do that, we can direct the precious few public dollars that we have to the things that we really need, which might not be a skyscraper or a sports venue. Maybe we need public safety.
Charlie LaDuff, he and Steve Neveling have two parts of their story out and two more to come. And you can find them in Deadline Detroit and in Motor City Muckraker. Charlie, thanks so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.